Hello, everybody. We're back. Tom Sosnoff. I'm here with Victor Jones. And we got a whole team tonight. We got Pete Momad in the house, Elias Spivak in the house, Beth on doing the production side of it. We got the A-team out tonight. Just got finished watching. I never thought I would say this in my entire life. The NCAA Women's Final. I watched bell to bell.
It's a good game. It's a good game. Good tournament. Good tournament.
Better tournament than game today, but better tournament for sure. And looking forward to the men's game tomorrow night.
Who you got?
If I make it home, based on traffic projections with the solar eclipse.
I hear you can look straight at it, Tom. So don't be shy.
No, I took my lessons from Trump. You can look straight at it. No problem.
Who do you got? Who do you got tomorrow?
Tomorrow night?
Yeah.
I'm a Midwestern now. I got to go Big Ten. I got to go Purdue. Mm. I think they're gonna have a hard time because the kid who's the center for UConn, he's great. Both centers are really good, but UConn's a better team. They got a better, you know, they got more players, more people that can play, but they're going to be almost impossible to beat. They're the chalk for sure, but I got to go Purdue. Hmm.
All right, man. What'd you think about last week's price action in equities?
I thought they had them on the ropes after the reversal on Thursday I felt like the Bears let me down on Friday because they never had a single sell-off. They didn't even, you know, it was like they had them, they staggered them like a boxing match. I felt like on Thursday, the Bears staggered the Bulls and they could have gone in for the kill and they didn't. They just let them off the hook and they let them come right back and, you know, and basically, you know, equalize the score, normalize the markets. I felt like it was the first time in months where I thought, you know, 100-point reversal in the S&Ps, a 500-point reversal in the NASDAQ, you have a real chance of having some follow-through. And there was absolutely nothing, and they just took it all back on Friday. So it kind of messed me up because, you know, I've been watching these markets a long time. I thought the chances of rallying back as much as they did on Friday would be very slim to none, and it wasn't.
What do you think about the VIX here at 16? Vol lifted a bit last week. Nothing crazy, no inversions or anything. But what do you think about the lift in vol?
I think that the vol lift was, you know, I think a lot of people were nervous about this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm not a geopolitical, like, you know, I don't let that influence my trading. But vol-wise, I think that, you know, people were reluctant to sell vol on Friday, even into that rally. Well, I think there are some people that didn't think the rally would hold. I thought that rally was pretty damn strong. There wasn't a sell-off all day. But I do understand, you know, I don't think vol came in at all because there was this kind of overhang from Thursday's what may have been, you know, some geopolitical risk. And I think that that'll all come out. You know, that should all come out tomorrow on Tuesday. I think you're going to see vol get annihilated.
Pretty nasty bear steepener last week. I'm not going to go too deep into it with you. I'm curious what Pete and Ilya's thoughts are. But, you know, were you looking at that at all? Did any part of that register with you?
What is a bear steepener?
Rates lifted, but rates in the back end of the curve lifted faster than the short end of the curve.
Oh, I think rates were... I can't believe they're back in the 16 handle. In fact, I don't even know how the market could be up here with rates where they are. Are we open right now? Yeah, we just
open.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me that
all the averages are up about a third of a percent right now.
Yeah.
14 points in the SPOOS, 65 points in the NASDAQ, about 100 points in the Dow, and 7.5 points in the Russell.
Which makes absolutely no sense with bonds down here. I just bought some. My ding isn't working, but for some reason my speakers are out. But I just bought some bonds at 31, and I'm I just put a 28 bid in. I am not filled. Because something's got to give here, and either the S&Ps are going to go lower, or the bonds are going to go higher. I just got filled at 28. Oh, because they're at 27. And I will put a 25 bid in because I'll be happy to buy some more there. I don't know why I'm buying bonds here, but I feel like the better hedge here is to be short, the market in long bonds. I'd much rather be short the market in long bonds than long the market and short bonds, if that makes any sense.
Sort of. So, I guess it depends on what you're long. But yeah, I'm with you.
So I just got filled at 25. So I bought 31s, 28, and 25s. And I just don't get it. I guess I'm a little confused as to at some point, okay. You know, the talk will be about raising interest rates if the bonds go much lower. I didn't think there was a chance they were gonna get into the 116 handle, and they're here. I mean, this is when they were trading 120. I didn't think they were going to get the 116 handle. I think now at, you know, 1625, 1624, if they go any lower from here, you know, there's real risk in the stock market. Can't have this divergence between stocks and bonds continue the way it is. Something's got to give. And the stock market is just too damn strong. Like Friday's rally, you know, no pullback at all. Crazy weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too fundamental or whatever, but, you know, it's sort of a bit weird. If you can't have two things true at one time, if bonds are all about growth and inflation, right? You can't have two things true at one time. You can't say that inflation is rising as the Fed did and growth is rising and that we are going to have a really strong economy. We still have a tight labor market. It's weird to be saying all of those things and also be saying I'm going to cut three times. And I get the rationale for those types of things, but at some point that starts to feel like you're antagonizing the long end. And over the last week, that's exactly what it ended up being with the long end lifting. And to your point, not putting a ton of pressure on equity still. And I don't know how long that holds up, quite frankly, equities. But I'm curious to get Pete's point of view as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll bring Pete in 1 second, but like I was just blown away by the rally on Friday, just because there wasn't even if it wasn't Thursday sell-off, I wouldn't be blown away by anything. But based on, you know, 100-point reversal, it's kind of crazy. Anyway, sure, we can bring in Pete.
Yellen's out there in China doing her thing, making some headlines out in China.
Well, good. That's her job, right?
I guess so. I quite frankly, I don't know what her job is anymore. Pete, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Victor. Tom, great to see you. Guys, let's talk about interesting stuff last week. Absolutely. As usual, the non-farm payroll was the event that really had nothing to do with anything and came in hot. So we traded down for, 3 minutes before the market basically put all the Thursday geopolitical risk,
literally
almost all of it, back into it one way.
Literally 1 minute, one tick. Because the only reason I know is because I had a resting bid in, because I had sold some the night before and I had a resting bid in, and I actually bought them down in the day. But that was my only good trade of the day.
Yeah.
After that, there was no other ones.
And then you're probably looking to lay them back out, I would imagine, at some point, just because the rally seemed to. But I think it really speaks to, I mean, that Friday's action on that non-farm number, which if you look at the headlines and everything, every part of that number was pretty solid in terms of employment and wage growth, but it's a backward looking number that really doesn't have a lot of relevance. And I think that yesterday, Friday's action was a classic example of why you don't trade that number. Because if you did, it really didn't play through the markets in any logical sense. So, divergence between bonds and equities. I think, you know, for me, I still look at twos, tens. The one thing, what's unwound, equities put all the risk they baked in on Thursday, they put back into the market right now, and we're trading. We're off the highs from tonight's opening, but we're still there. Bonds making new lows below 117 for the week. But Victor, you made an interesting point. The bear steepener, but we didn't see the twos tens really. Mm-hmm. 36 basis points of inversion. So when we look at, okay, things are things good? Well, interest rates are getting comfortable staying up. They're, you know, we're seeing now, I think the Fed's got priced in 65 basis points of rate cuts between now and the end of the year, which is the lowest we've been since they started pricing in rate cuts. I think we were out to 7 rate cuts at one. We're down to basically 2.5 now. And June's a 50-50 bet. So that keeps getting baked out, those cuts. But haven't seen the inversion unwind at all, which I'm really surprised about. So if that inversion is not going to really unwind, I don't know how sustainable these 2-year lows, these 10-year lows, these 30-year lows, and NASDAQ and SPOOs where they are. I think that for me, I'm still looking at, I'm buying twos and selling tens on some rallies we get. So I'm legging into that touch spread. I continue to do that. It's moved a little bit, but not much. So buying twos down here is kind of, I'll buy some twos down here tonight. And then if the markets bounce a little bit, I'll sell some tens against them on a 2-to-1 basis. But I really think the disconnect is between, you know, is this basically, this rally in NASDAQ is kind of a time thing to me. If it holds through Monday into Tuesday, then maybe it's going to be tough to be short on this rally. But I've got a feeling that they basically put in 3/4 of the fear they took out on Thursday, just in a one-way rally on Friday to punish anybody who was short or got out. And I don't think it's going to hold.
Well, there's no way. The one thing I think that we can't forget here, Pete, as a trader, if you're short, given where the market is, even if it's down 50 or 70 on on Thursday,
right,
you can't cover one lot. You've been short now.
No.
Nobody got short at the absolute top.
No.
So all the shorts are underwater. So you're not covering anything. So there wasn't a cover. No. So it wasn't even, covering was not an option, in my opinion. The only thing that's, like the stock market, it's still going to be, after Friday's action, to me, it's still just a trader's market here, you know, which is until they break its back, there's, you know, I guess you just got to trade it until they break the back, maybe keep a couple short deltas in your back pocket. I think there are other markets that are also, you know, the stock market is not the only market that's at an extreme. You know, crude oil's at its high, bonds are at their lows, gold is at its high, you know, silver's at its high. There's a lot of things, and there's a lot of equities that have had these huge divergences, you know, like from, you know, one from each other. Like I remember a while back, you know, looking at like Microsoft AMD when they were, you know, that's moved like $40, you know, AMD is now relative to Microsoft, you know, looking at AMD relative to Nvidia, Intel relative to AMD. I mean, there are plays in there that are like Intel hasn't had an uptick, Nvidia hasn't had a downtick. There's just lots of really, what is that, Intel right now you're putting up there, Vic?
Yeah, and I think they have a conference this week, so they might have some catalysts.
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, you know, like my point is that there's a lot of stocks that are actually on their butts that are in the same industry. And so I think that there, you know, there's more than a few interesting potential areas of play. But, you know, look at Apple relative to pick anything on the other side of it. You know, Apple, Microsoft, if you want to, or Apple, Amazon, or Apple, even Apple, Google, which is like the battle of beating down things, but still. I think, like, based on the option trading volume and based on everything, like, trading's good right now, interesting, but, you know, for broad marketplace, maybe there's not, you know, maybe there's not a big, giant, you know, until they finally break this thing down, like, until it has multiple days in a row, until you give up, what? We can't even give up 2%.
No. I agree with you. And, you know, I'm looking at some stuff, commodity stuff, FCX, Freeport-McMoRan.
That hasn't had a downtick.
No, it hasn't. Now, granted, copper well above $4, $4.25. But, you know, disconnect here, copper against, you know, I mean, I know for all the reasons, and I read three different things this weekend talking about how the property sector is going to, and I think, Vic, we talked about, are the Chinese actually going to devalue their currency, which I don't think in a million years they will actually do. Will they let it drift? They'll let it drift to a point, but I don't think they will try to buy their way out of this with a devaluation. But, you know, when you see all those stories being so bad, XMI against things like FCX, you know, that Chinese copper play has always had a correlation to it. There's none left right now. Now, and that's why you're seeing the divergence between the two. Some of those plays seem really interesting to me. Taking a look at commodities, some of the commodity equities, and looking at some plays between them, between the equity indexes.
You know what, if you're going to talk about China, Pete, you know what's actually kind of interesting to me is that FXI, which is large cap Chinese stocks trading right in Hong Kong, is actually much stronger than the large cap Chinese stocks that we trade.
Right. You mean so, the Babas and stuff like that?
Yeah, like Baba and Baidu are kind of on their butts.
Right.
That, and I know it's a really weird ratio, so it's not really tradable. Like, I hate talking about things that aren't actionable for retail investors. And to be fair, that pairs trade is not really actionable for retail investors because you're not going to do it like 10 to 1 or whatever it is.
Right.
But on a relative basis, just pointing it out, the large, like FXI has had a nice rally, but these Chinese stocks have not. Something's got to give there too.
It's because some of those consumer products or tech products are going through the same thing that we're seeing here. But there's others like Trip.com, which is a Chinese listed ADR. This thing's going bananas to the upside. So it's like the Chinese stock themes that were in play before with the Babas, the Baidus, the JD.coms, to your point, they're not rolling yet. But there's in the big world of Chinese listed or U.S. listed Chinese ADRs, there's a decent handful that are seeing participation. That's why you're seeing this sort of weird divergence between FXI and like your typical Chinese name.
Oh, I agree with you, which is interesting, you know, for me, because I usually like to trade all of those, and FXI has been confusing to me. Mm-hmm. It's not that great a trading vehicle, and the options, you know, have no premium because it's, you know, it's a $24 stock or whatever. But all I was pointing out is there's lots of extremes out there right now,
right?
Which I find interesting.
What do you guys do with the gold let's call it extreme in the short term, Pete? I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, is gold expensive at 2350? Yeah, it actually, I thought we'd do what it had done once, is test above 2320 or so, and then it would fail back down. It seems to, I mean, they're giving back a tiny bit here at what, $13 off the highs from where we went out on Friday, but that's not much. Actually, you know what's cheap when you look at pairs? Gold, silver, which Tom, I think you sold above 90 and a half or 91, is now down to 85. So
I know it was in the 84 handle on Friday morning, I think, or Thursday afternoon. Yeah. It's had kind of a massive move, that ratio. I actually like trading it. It's just, to be fair, for most retail investors, it's a little too big.
You can skid it up with micro gold and micro silver, make it smaller, but it is, it doesn't work well with GLD and SLV.
No. You gotta
use... it's an expensive trade.
Yeah, to cut down the size by a tenth, you got to use MCL and SIL, the micro products,
right,
which is totally fine, but even that thing moves, you know, moves 100 hours a day. I mean, it's not like it doesn't move.
No, absolutely not with $20-$30 in gold, and I think we had one up day in silver that was $1.34. So.
I think we had like a 70 cent reversal on Friday from down 50 to like up something in silver.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, watching that a little bit.
But Vic, that's the reason that you asked before why, like you talked about vol. That's why vol stayed elevated, because whenever you see commodities like doing things that they don't normally do, like gold running away to the upside, silver having these huge reversals, you know, copper was up huge on Friday, right. Crude oil, you know, made a new high at over 87 or whatever. Whenever you see this kind of stuff, it gets people to buy, you know, volatility protection, I guess, or to buy vol, let's put it that way.
Hmm. So okay, this is what gets me in trouble. The whys always get me in trouble. Do either of you gentlemen have a swing as to the why in gold, or you're just going to tell me who cares, trade the price?
Yeah, who cares, trade the price?
I think when you, from my experience, Vic, I mean, when you try to attach reason to it, then you get stubborn on price, and you only let yourself trade one side of the market. And, you know, looking at gold, silver here, what I'm saying is I'm buying the highs, but I'm selling something that I think is more expensive against it. So I don't want to curve fit the exercise. I mean, there's been talk that this is, again, this is Chinese driven. Again, another way of trying to offshore some of the problems of real estate, other stuff into gold. I think it's tough when you look at the amalgam of reasons to change over time, trying to assert any one to them. I think the price action, the fact that we cleared 2100 so quickly, 22, and now 23, which I didn't think, I thought we'd clear it, but it wouldn't hold. It would do a Sunday night kind of clearing of the decks of the week shorts, but it's not giving back that much ground right now. So
Can I make a stupid like comment about that?
Yeah.
There is a Bitcoin digital asset mentality right now in the world of commodities. And I don't think I've ever seen it quite like this before. It exists in certain stocks too. It might have started in meme stocks back a couple of years ago, but there is a certain mentality that since the whole blow up in the digital asset space and all the cryptocurrencies, of people have become much more resilient and they're less likely to sell out of stuff. I don't think I've ever seen this in all the years we've been trading. We've seen a lot more, you know, people willing to be short, be on the other side of things. Now people like buy things, and if it goes down one day, they just buy it again. Like they don't think anything can go down. Nothing.
Yeah, I think you're definitely getting that. We haven't had a 15-point correction in gold. We haven't had.
Yeah, it's a Bitcoin. I'm telling you, Pete, it's a crazy Bitcoin phenomenon that happened with all these digital assets, and because nobody ever sells them. Do you ever hear anybody complain that we can't short digital assets?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever. I haven't got one email in 5 years about people not being able to sell. If you can't short something like some meme stock or something because the borrow costs are too high, I get like 50 emails. Why can't I short this? Or why can't we do this? You know, whatever. I haven't got a single email in 5 years saying, why can't we short Bitcoin Cash? And I know it's because that, you know, it's just, we have a different mentality when it comes to this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Pete, we're going to keep moving tonight. We're going to go on to Ilya, but thanks so much.
All right, guys. Great to see you. Have a good night.
Good to see you, Pete.
Thanks. Let's bring on the Ilya.
What's going on,
Ilya? What's going on, man?
I got a theory for gold, actually, and I was a lot more encouraged by Friday's price action being a bear. I thought that it looked like nobody wanted to have bearish conviction on Friday, but nobody wanted to give up the bearish ghost looking at the price action. I thought between Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, especially if you look on ES, but if you look on and Q as well, you get this sense that on Wednesday you established where range support was. On Thursday you broke that support. On Friday you very demonstrably retested and couldn't get back over. So I'm pretty curious what's going to happen here. I think the winds of bearish change might be finally upon us.
The winds of bearish change. I closed out. I was long a lot of these metals outright. So gold, silver, copper.
That is very unmillennial-like of you.
I could give a shit what everybody else is doing.
That is very ungenerational of you. Your generation never sells.
I don't care. I don't care what they're doing. So I closed out long gold. I closed out long silver. I decreased the copper position in half. I'm still long gold miners and stuff like that, Freeport, McMoRan, and stuff that has exposure. I'm actually short gold. the underlying via put spreads just as a hedge to the position. I'm short crude oil as well as a hedge to my energy longs. That's where I'm at. What do you think about the big macro week coming up, Ilya?
Well, I think we really get the sense, really over the past month, that this theory that I've been toying around with, which is that what the market wants is cheaper future money. And once the cheaper future money doesn't look cheaper and looks more expensive, risk sentiment basically dies on the vine. Nobody basically wants to take a punt on the great and wonderful AI future beyond a certain point if the money is not going to be cheaper later. And over the past month, we got to a point where the market is now on the hawkish side of Fed expectations. And the rally has stopped. In NASDAQ, it hasn't moved in a month. In the S&P, it got a little bit of extra push, but has since rolled over. And if you want to be a simpleton about it, as I like to be, when you look at the S&P 500 here, what is an uptrend by definition? It is a series of higher highs and higher lows. You now have a lower low. That's different. That hasn't happened since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And so this, I think, matters. I think that we couldn't come over the Wednesday, that little candle that you see there, basically establishing you support on that range that you couldn't get back over and hold back over. I think that matters. Mm-hmm. So this week, I look at it and I say, okay, CPI is the big number here for the Fed, how cheap is the money going to be story. And if CPI here comes in hotter, I think it tells the Fed that when they go and revise the official forecasting, whatever, in June, they might have to rethink this whole three cuts thing. Now, we did get a really ugly ISM services number last week, and the prices component of that tends to lead overall CPI by about 3 months, 2-3 months, give or take. And it was very disinflationary. So maybe the Fed is on to something, but the market's not buying it. And really, it doesn't matter if the Fed ultimately is right. It matters if the market buys the story now. And if you look at what they're baking in, it's less than 60 basis points for the whole year.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the market went from way more dovish than the Fed to actually a bit more hawkish than where the Fed is now?
Well, the data has been consistently hotter since the beginning of the year. What you see is the Fed, if you want to do sort of the simple timeline, in September, the Fed is hawkish. And they tell the markets, yeah, we think it's actually going to be less cuts. And the market goes, oh my God. And 50 basis points of term premium comes into the 10-year. Everything freaks out. Fed comes back in November and goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Thank you very much for the 50 basis points. That's exactly what we wanted. We appreciate it. We're done now. And the market goes, oh, awesome. They're done. They must be scared. Bake out six cuts. The Fed comes back in late December and goes, yeah, it's like three. And the market toys around with that idea, but then the data starts to go the Fed's way. As the year starts, we keep getting stronger NFP, stronger CPI, this, that, and the spread between the market and the Fed starts to narrow in. Market says five, Fed goes, no, three. Market says four, Fed says, no, 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 three. And then it narrows and narrows and narrows until now the market is on the hawkish side of the Fed.
What did you make of the NFP? Is it a strong report? Like some people said, full-time jobs actually dropped by 1%.
They did.
And part-time jobs were up 7.5%. So on aggregate, it's not as strong as the headline number would lead you to believe. How'd you interpret Friday's number?
For me, I don't really care what the academic read is. I care what the price action says the read is, because that's what's gonna give you an idea of what the lens is through which you can actually trade it. Because for me, it's not really the substance of the macro data. It's what the market does with the macro data. It's the intersection of the price action and the outcome. All so right, if so the market, so if the market looked at the outcome and said yields go higher, dollar goes higher, and we get a generally kind of pro-growth response from stocks, but they're ultimately not really catching back over where they cracked on Thursday, my sense is hotter economy, more inflation, fewer cuts is how the market read it.
Mm. So what does that mean? What are you doing with risk this week? Let's make this actionable then.
I'm on the risk off side of things. I reloaded long dollars. It really stressed me out on that ISM number when the dollar got absolutely smoked, but I survived it. Ultimately, it didn't shake me out of my risk thresholds, although on Aussie dollar, it got a little hairy. And so I'm long dollars. I added a SPY put spread. Actually, I couldn't get filled on MES for Friday afternoon. The liquidity was just way too thin. So I put it on as a SPY put spread down to like 505 on SPY with the front part at like 518. So essentially almost in the money.
Tom, what are you doing with risk this week?
Well, I don't think of things like you guys. So when you say, what am I doing this week? Why would this week be any different for me than other?
Like, just give the people your answer, man. Just tell
like, them I don't what know, you're like, doing this week. Like that, like what you guys are talking about right now kind of cracks me up because like, mm-hmm. I don't look at this week different or anything like that. But I mean, like, you know, I just bought bonds tonight. I've already long them actually. So it's not like I'm adding to my position tonight. I bought 31s, 28s, and 25s. So it's about 28 tonight. But I that's just a scalp if they go up, you know, 10 or 20 ticks from here. Only thing I'm doing different than Ilya, because I'm kind of on the same side as him. I'm long a bunch of put spreads and I'm short a bunch of premium, which is kind of, I'm a little bit mixed on it because vol's low here. I don't love selling premium, but it's my hedge to the upside. But I am short some of the AI stocks as well. And I'm also short the I'm short the NASDAQ and the S&Ps. I'm just short premium in the Russell because the Russell has high volatility, higher than anything else. And I'm long bonds. And the only thing I'm doing different from Ilya is he is short dollars and I am long dollars. I'm sorry.
Either way.
He's long dollars and I have the opposite position on. I am I think the dollar is making a very important long-term top here. And I think you have to trade dollars from the long side. I might also want to point out that the yen right now is at 666. Anytime you ever see a market there, Ilya, just so you know, this is from decades of trading. Whenever a market trades at 666, it's over, just so you know.
Like the yen is one that was a long, painful bleed out. I had a long call spread on it that I just let go and just didn't roll because it's gone nowhere. It's now stuck. So that one I'm not approaching.
Victor, the better question
I have
is
euro and pound at this point.
Yeah, I'm short puts in the euro, Aussie, yen, and I'm also long the pound. But
I've abandoned ship on Aussie as well.
But Victor, the real question here is not what are you going to do with all the economic data coming out this week? It's what are you going to do when you have, like, don't you understand the concept of solar eclipses and all that kind of stuff? I mean, that's what everybody's waiting for. I mean, you know, that's when markets turn, you know.
Lunar cycles, that's right.
Lunar cycles, sure. Sure.
Give me a break, Thomas. You don't even believe in, like, not only do you not believe in like those monthly seasonalities, which I don't agree with either. I don't think they're worth anything. It's like flipping a coin every month and writing down which side they lean to. I mean, I get that, you know, towards tax season and stuff like this, you have structural bias into these weeks. That's fair.
Before you were born.
Lunar cycles, bro.
No, I know.
Is that where you're at? Hey, what sign are you, by the way? What sign are you, Tom?
I'm a Pisces.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I'm an Aries.
I don't really follow any of that stuff. But what's funny is back in the day, like in the 80s and 90s, traders used to talk about full moons and half moons and new moons. Like, you would hear more bull crap on that stuff. Like, we're going up today, it's a new moon. We're going up today, it's a, I forgot now all the different terms, but there were all these people that would offer courses in lunar cycles on with respect to trading.
Now, and that said,
get a kick out of that.
That said, I have read Neil Howe's book, The Fourth Turning. I have read Ray Dalio's book on dealing with changing world order. A lot of those are all wrapped around the 75 or 85 year cycles, both social cycles and debt cycles. And I do think there's something to that. I do think there's something to those longer overarching cycles.
I'll tell you what, as I walk around San Francisco and see kids dressed like the kids in 93, there's definitely some kind of cyclicality to some of it.
The goth kids in JNCO jeans?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at me. I just keep the same look, and it just goes through different cycles.
I'm saying the way I'm walking around now is the way the kids.
I'm just the waiting kids are looking. For
all of a sudden,
come.
I'm back in style.
I come full circle. Yeah. That's who I am. So, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. And so, I would like to see this week. I would like to see bonds higher. I would like to see crude oil and gold a little lower, but. For the most part, I'd like to see the market here not go back to, I think the most painful thing it could do for me right now is to go back to new highs. I would rather see it, you know, I think it would be healthy to have a 5% pullback. Healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not looking for any kind of crash or collapse, but I think you're out of juice in the rally that got us up here. Yeah. And if you're going to have a sustainable longer term story, then there needs to be digestion. It's not supposed to go up in a straight line.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. One more for fun before you get out of here. I'm going to make you pick directionally. Crude oil, what would you do with it this week? Both of you. Start with you, Tom.
Oh, I'd sell it.
I agree.
I'm buying it up here.
I agree. I think crude oil, the way I've been talking about it on Macro Money and on Overtime is crude oil is driven by the fear of fear itself. Mm. So it's this idea that you're actually going to get some sort of a disruption that hasn't occurred yet, but it's the possibility that there's enough shenanigans going on in areas where there's a lot of crude that something could occur. And
the hundreds talk. Every time there's talk of 100, I just want to get shorted. And the hundreds came out of the woodwork again. So I'll just put that on the records.
Fair enough. Before we get out of here, let's make sure everybody hit the like button, leave us a comment, tell us where you're viewing from in the chat. Back to you, Thomas.
I'm good. I liked this talk tonight. Short and sweet. And I will say one thing about this week, Vic, because you asked about this week. It's going to be good. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but trading is going to be good. Like, it's going to be the place to play. Like,
there's going to be a fun week. There's been a few fun weeks back to back. And again, I would argue it's because the money has stopped getting cheaper. And so now things are volatile. Markets are sensitive. They're jumping around headlines. This is exactly the kind of thing where you don't just go, whatever. It doesn't matter. It'll be cheap to borrow back if I screw up. Now it's not. And all of a sudden things matter and people are getting jumpy. So it's fine.
I also think through all the Fed squawk last week, I think people are starting to get to the point where there's just like, oh, shut up. You know, it's like one person saying one thing, another person saying another. That's my point is like, getting to the point where everybody's not hanging on every word of the Federal Reserve, that's probably a lot healthier place to be than, you know, if this, then else stuff that was
opium dies slowly, but eventually.
Amen, brother. Take us out. Take us out.
All right. Well, good
Supreme
stuff.
Supreme leader.
It was a very good talk tonight, boys. And I'm looking forward to this week. We are going to rock and it's going to be good. Same. Everybody have a great night tonight and we'll see you bright and early. Show starts at 7 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. So get your helmet on.
Peace.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducer.